Okay. I work at the Plant Genetic Resources Unit in Geneva, New York, on the vegetable crops, and we're a germplasm repository. And I do characterization of vegetable crops, and I'm going to talk about a study of genomic diversity in wild tomato. One of our collections is a large cultivated tomato collection, but we also have some wild species accessions. And this one wild species, Lycopersicon pruvianum, has been used extensively for improving cultivars. It's the most diverse wild tomato species, and it's been especially used for disease resistance. And pretty recently, in 2005, the species was reclassified into four distinct species. So for our collection, we grew 120 accessions in 2009 in Geneva to look at the species identities and try to key out these new species. And these are the four species here. Arcanum is the most distinct of the four, and then there's other key traits that I won't talk about, but that can help distinguish the other species. So what we did was we sampled 46 accessions from six different species, not only the four species I told you about, but two closely related species to Arcanum, and one plant per accession for DNA extraction. And this is a map of where the species, the samples were taken from. And here is the number of accessions, which is the number of DNA samples per species. And our purpose was to develop mapped markers in these species to look at genetic variation, possibly to look for, discover diagnostic markers among the various species. And finally, we did a little bit of work about looking at signals for natural selection on the markers. And I'm not going to talk about the technique, but we use genotyping by sequencing. If anybody has any questions about that, they can ask me later. But basically, we use GBS in 96-plex format, and we were able to discover over 71,000 SNPs in the 46 plants, 4,000 to 10,000 SNPs per chromosome. Tomato has 12 chromosomes. And that's an average of 96 SNPs per megabase. And we mapped them against the cultivated tomato genome. And we did something called filtering the sites, which basically I was trying to find the complete matrix of no missing data. So I only took SNPs with at least 46 in all 46 samples. And when I did that, we had still over 14,000 SNPs. So that was the no missing data set. And for these 14,000, some of these SNPs were in perfect linkage disequilibrium with each other. So I used a Perl script that we published called Allele Coder and was able to collapse those 14,000 data points into about a little, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 data points, either depending on whether we had six species or four species. So these are my what we call unique variables for this data set. And the method itself is designed to avoid highly repetitive DNA. And what we did, for example, this is chromosome 1. And I mapped the position of the SNP markers along the chromosome. And then I compared it to the tomato genome paper in Nature and looked at where the highly repetitive DNA was along that chromosome versus where the genes are along that chromosome. And you can see our markers are highly correlated with the gene-rich regions, which is what the technique is designed to do. And this is smaller, but it's showing all 12 chromosomes. And in every chromosome, we got this nice result. The gene-rich regions are usually near the distal ends of the chromosomes, and the heterochromatin is towards the middle of the chromosomes. And just to mention this, because they're mapped, we can use the tomato genome browser, and we can look at each SNP and see its position within a gene in a coding region. If there's certain genes that we're interested in, we can identify mutations in those genes markers. So for these species, these six species here, we did a population structure analysis to see how the species are related to each other. So treating each species as a population now, based on the 14,000 SNPs. This axis shows the membership proportion. The analysis gave the optimum number of clusters as 2. So, for example, this species has almost 100% of its genome represented by cluster, this blue cluster. And this species, Arcanum, and also the two close relatives are almost 100%. Their genome is in this other yellow-colored cluster. But you can see there's some mixture, especially in the species Huliacens. It's about 50% proportion in each of the two clusters. And these species have been previously categorized into Arcanum and Areopersicum species groups. And this matches up pretty well, except for this one, Huliacens. We also did principal components, and here it was favorable to use the smaller data set to save on the computational demands. And you can see these are the Arcanum samples out here in this 3D plot. Huliacens is this purplish one, and it seems like it has like two groups, one that's tightly clustered here, and then one that is more intermingled with the others from that other group. One thing I did was isolation by distance, so because we have the map positions of where the accessions were originally sampled from, I could correlate the genetic distance using the unique variables against the log of the distance in kilometers between the populations. And I also broke it down into within species pairs versus between species pairs, which are the diamonds. And you can see there is a correlation, significant correlation, of genetic distance with physical distance, geographic distance. And also the slope is steeper for these interspecies pairs compared to the within species pairs. So it does look like there's something going on. There's more than just distance involved. If you look at between species, that seems to give a stronger isolation. So it does look like there's something genetically going on between these four species as far as their genetic distances from each other, the samples. And here's another way to look at the data. This is the 14,000 SNPs now. And what I did was pairwise comparisons of frequency of the minor allele for each SNP. So the darker the little square in this graph, that means more data points are there. So if you look at Arcanum, which is the most distinct species, its allele frequencies aren't very well correlated with the allele frequencies in the other species. But if you look at, say, these two species, Pruvianum and Cornelimulliri, they have very highly correlated allele frequencies, and they're very hard to distinguish with each other from each other if you look at their genetic distance from each other. So this gives you a nice visual picture of how the species are related to each other in pairs. And also you can start looking for alleles that distinguish different species. So this would be a place to start looking for diagnostic alleles. And when we look at the alleles for these diagnostic alleles versus, it's based on presence versus absence of an allele. So in this table, the number of SNP markers with allele frequency in the species 1, the row, is present, and species 2, it's absent. So you're looking for presence or absence of an allele. And this is a number of markers. For example, in the species pair Arcanum Pruvianum, there are 1,606 potential SNPs that are present in Arcanum, but they're not found in our sample of Pruvianum. So in order to verify this, we'd have to use higher numbers of samples, but these are at least a starting point to look for these diagnostic alleles. And then just to do a little more with the data, we did a test, and I can talk to people about that later if they're interested, where you look for what are called FST outliers, just based on allele frequencies and comparing the different, the SNPs, the frequencies and the heterozygosity of the data. You can look for signals of balancing selection or positive selection. And these are the 12 chromosomes and the map positions along the chromosomes. So we found lots of what are called outlier SNPs. So these are potentially selected SNPs. And in the sample, anyway. And so these are things that we could look at for candidate genes for maybe ecological differences among the species. So to conclude, the technique of GBS was very successful in developing tens of thousands of map SNP markers to apply to this Solanum peruvianum sensu-lato, is a wide sense species complex. Geographical isolation by distance was strongly supported, especially between species. These two previously defined species groups, they were genetically distinct from each other, except for this one species, Huliacense, which surprisingly showed 50% membership in each of the two groups, but other authors have found something similar. These two species were not significantly differentiated from each other on our data, and other people have, again, found similar results. But this is one researcher who has studied them more carefully and shown that they have extensive niche overlap, but different distributions for certain climatic variables. So his hypothesis is that speciation was recent. So what we may be observing, the reason they're so similar is that they're sharing these old polymorphisms, but they are geographically in pockets, possibly in different climates. So it might not be recent gene flow that's making them so similar. It might just be old shared polymorphisms. So our data can support that hypothesis. We did find many thousands of SNP markers that could potentially be used to distinguish the pairs of species to help us identify these wild species. But as I mentioned, we want to verify those markers on larger numbers of samples. And we did find almost 1,700 markers that were found based on tests of selection, just based on their allele frequencies and their heterozygosity. So if anyone's interested in looking at adaptive divergence among these species, these could be candidates to start. And I just would like to thank at PGRU, our technical support staff, some Arliano Bombarli at Cornell provided an R script to map the SNPs. We got C from the Rick Center, and we used the CBSU unit at Cornell University to do the bioinformatics. And all the raw data has been deposited in GenBank, and also this paper has been published recently in Genome. And I'd be happy, I have a minute left so I can take any questions. Oh, the question is about the tobacco mosaic virus versus the tomato mosaic virus. And is there any resistance, natural resistance to that? That I can't really tell you. That list of resistances that I showed you, that's all historical work that has been done. So that tobacco mosaic virus was already bred in previously a long time ago, and I don't know if anybody has found the tomato mosaic virus specific resistance in the wild relatives.
Do you think the tobacco mosaic
and the tomato mosaic would the data be similar? Yeah, asking about the difference between the two diseases resistance, that I can't answer because I don't work on that. But and anyway, I ran out of time, so if anybody has any more questions, you can come see me afterwards. I'll be here, and I'd like to get the next speaker up here, please.